John Batchelor, CBS Eye on the World. Xi Jinping, the very powerful leader of the People's Republic of China, pledged at a meeting most recently, Financial Times report, that the party was planning, quote, far-reaching changes, which, aside from financial sector reform, would include exerting closer control over the technology and science sectors. We also have a hesitation by the Financial Times report about the recent positive news of manufacturing rebound in China following the COVID zero disaster. The Financial Times adds, the new team, Mr. Xi is to appoint, will have to convince skeptical investors that China has reopened for business in earnest. I welcome my colleague, Chris Riegel, the CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm with business all around the world, including China. This is the Scala Report. Chris, a very good evening to you. The manufacturing rebound from zero, from the electricity being shut down 2 or 3 days a week, from nobody coming to work because of the COVID zero lockdown policies, that is to be expected. However, the puzzle here is investing again in China, building new relationships in China following COVID zero. The Financial Times has doubts. Other people have doubts. Do you have doubts, Chris, because you deal with China routinely?
John, I think there's been a series of changes that have happened post-COVID. One is that most global companies, especially in the technology sector, are looking to diversify their supply because they became overly reliant on China. So you're seeing that diversification. Look at Apple's move from China towards India and Vietnam. And that's both a diversity of supply chain as well as a cost point, because the costs of labor in China have risen pretty dramatically over the last 5 years. Second is a change in U.S. government policy. U.S. government policy previously was that China was a competitor, and now it seeks to be a rival. And you're seeing more messaging out of Washington, both Republican and Democratic administrations, that are saying decouple from the Chinese supply chain. That's further followed up with moves from Washington, starting on the Biden administration in October of last year, to basically decapitate the Chinese chip industry by banning the import of tools needed to make semiconductor products within China. So there really is a pretty substantial trade war as it goes in tech. And I think you're seeing more and more companies saying, while China is still a part of that supply chain, we need to lessen that supply and diversify that supply because the road ahead looks to be quite bumpy.
Therefore, may I interpret this Financial Times report that Xi has a new team coming in to exert closer control over the technology and science sectors? This is in direct response, not only to the Biden administration's mandates, but also to this report that we have from Bloomberg Asia. Foxconn commits to new electronics manufacturing in India. Foxconn Technology signed an agreement to invest in India's southern Telangana state to manufacture electronics as the Apple Incorporated supplier looks to pivot beyond China. Foxconn is the owner of that vast campus where there was extreme disorder, people escaping over the fences, I recall, from COVID zero policies, where there have been many suicide reports, people in despair, young people in despair leaping from the top. Does this tell us that Foxconn's getting out? That's a Taiwan-owned operation that has had very close, warm relations with Beijing for many decades.
John, what it tells you is that the customer is shifting. So if you think of the Chinese economy as being a very much an export-based economy, when large companies like Apple, as an example, or Samsung or Kyocera or others say it's no longer viable for us to build product in China, we need to move to other markets, Mr. Modi in India is a quite welcome choice in those environments. There's some challenges with Indian infrastructure and other problems. However, you have much more transparency, much more a rule of law, in many cases, fully English-speaking employee base. So as Mr. Xi's grip on China tightens, that's simply handing business on a silver platter to Mr. Modi.
We come to something you bring to my attention for the first time ever, which is how the People's Republic of China has conducted business quite aside or outside of the good intentions of the WTO, which embraced China in the late 20th century. The short version is it's called FAPIO. And as I understand, the Chinese government, the Beijing, not only subsidizes certain favored industries, that would be technology especially. This was the ambition of Mr. Xi many years ago, to achieve singularity by 2025. All the high-end manufacturing could be done here as well, no depending on overseas patents. Not only that, they subsidize those favored industries, but also there is subsidy as the export product leaves China. Chris, what is FAPIO? How does it work, and how is it now changing, surprisingly?
So FAPIO is the equivalent of a value-added tax within China, and FAPIO is designed to incentivize Chinese companies to export product. The FAPIO rate is typically approximately 13%, and when you're buying components in China, each supplier you buy from adds FAPIO to their invoices. You pay through that through the supply chain. And then when you export with your value add, you get a FAPIO rebate as that product is leaving China. What that boils down to is effectively a 3 to 4% subsidy for most manufacturing that happens in China, where the government is paying you a 3 to 4% stipend for export. That's been very successful at allowing Chinese businesses to undercut other very cost competitive industries worldwide, because you could always count on the government for that 3 to 4% rebate. Effectively now, the FAPIO process, which was submission of a rebate on export, and you'd get that check or payment from the government in 3 to 5 days. There's been a policy change now in China that would suggest liquidity challenges, because FAPIO payments are now moving to a 3-month basis instead of a 3 or 4 day basis. That will dramatically kneecap much of Chinese industry, who depends on that FAPIO as a source of profitability around many of the goods that they make, and is just another sign of challenges within that Chinese economy.
You politely say liquidity crisis. Is that cash? They're out of cash? Is that why they delay 3 months rather than 3 days?
Only the Chinese government would know, but it would certainly signal that to be a problem. With the amount of exports that have come from China dropping pretty substantially, container freight would suggest maybe as much as a 30 to 35% drop. The guess is that you can keep those plates spinning when you have high levels of production. Now that production has receded, you're seeing those numbers go down. It points to a liquidity crisis.
The pledge that the General Secretary, Mr. Xi Jinping, made included not only closer control over technology and science sector, however, it also included increased party involvement in, quote, non-public enterprises. I can only guess what that refers to. The translation is always ambiguous, and that's to the advantage of China. However, recently we've had a series of stories about a very well-to-do man, Fan Bao, who is detained now by authorities after being missing for a while. He's not a minor player. He was the go-between for the investor class from Europe and America and elsewhere into China. His enterprise was the China Renaissance Holdings. He's being detained, and the reason's having to do with an executive at his bank who's possibly being questioned about corruption. But in any event, I bring up the question of non-public enterprises. That might be a polite way of saying we're going to strong-arm people if they don't obey us. That doesn't sound like an attractive way to win the investor confidence again. Or has it always been like this, Chris? We're just now seeing it explained.
So, John, when you have a company in China, you have CCP party members who are in your accounting department. And every week, you're reporting your sales, your bank balances, all transactions to the government. So that's part of the deal in working in China. The government gets full transparency into your business, even as a private business. And generally speaking, that's acceptable and it's not a problem. What you're seeing now is a further tightening by Mr. Xi around especially larger cap tech companies, where some of these quasi oligarchs within China are seeking to flee China. You have large capital outflows from China reported to be about $200 billion in the last month to 2 months. So you're seeing people in China who are very wealthy, very successful, starting to try to pull money out of China. And that runs to a problem for China of, again, a capital outflow.
Manufacturing reviving. That is a positive. I'll take it for that. Because of the problems that the U.S. and Europe is having with inflation, manufacturing reviving, maybe eliminating the supply chain inflation. And yet, Chris, we have reports from Europe in these last hours and certainly from the U.S. last week. I think the polite way of saying it is sticky inflation. Do you see that in your business, business to business, sticky inflation? We have about a minute.
So I would see that inflation continuing both on the labor as well as the parts supply challenges and those supply chains. So the inflation number does not seem to be going away anytime soon and continuing to slightly creep up.
And that is a hesitation everywhere, correct, Chris? That means that planning becomes extremely difficult third quarter, fourth quarter into 24.
It does. And with we serve 16,000 customers around the world and thousands within the U.S. Most of my mid to large tier customers in the U.S. are either planning or in the process of layoffs. So you're starting to see more of a bite within the large enterprise sector of shedding of jobs and leaning these businesses for the recession.
Chris Riegel, CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm. I'm John Batchelor. This is the Scala Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I will never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm David Pogue from CBS Sunday Morning. In the new season of my podcast, Unsung Science, you'll meet the discoverers of Ernest Shackleton's shipwreck, Endurance, lost beneath the Antarctic for 100 years.
It looked like the day when it sank. It's just a very good environment down there to conserve a shipwreck.
The woman who invented forensic genealogy and has solved over 150 cold cases.
It's controversial, right? Because you never know if sitting around your Thanksgiving table, there's somebody who's been getting away with murder or rape.
And the NASA engineers who flew a helicopter on Mars.
The density is 1% that of Earth's. 1% air density. It sounds impossible, and it is almost impossible.
It's season 2 of Unsung Science, presented by CBS Sunday Morning and Simon & Schuster. Listen to Unsung Science on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.